Okay. Can everybody hear me okay?
Good.
Okay. All right. It is 9:31, and the Committee on Behavior Analysts is called to order for September 27th of 2024. Ms. Malice, would you take a roll call for us?
Mr. Chair, I'm going to go ahead and step in and do that because I think that Ms. Malice is having some audio microphone issues at the moment, so I'll
Okay.
substitute. Dr. Byra?
Present.
Dr. Davy?
Present.
Ms. Denton is absent. Dr. Rates? Good morning, Dr. Rates. I see. Okay. And then Dr. Stenhoff.
Present.
Okay. Mr. Chair, you have a quorum.
Okay, thank you. All right, agenda item number three, remarks and announcements. I wanted to thank my fellow committee members for their time reviewing the documents for today. And I also want to thank board staff, who is always a pleasure to work with. Very helpful for not only me and my fellow committee members, but also for the community and for the protection of the community. And also to Ms. Galvin, who provides such consistent and important advice to us throughout these meetings. So, Ms. Galvin, also thank you very much for that. Appreciate it. We also have continuing education credit for the maintenance of BACB certification. The Board of Psychologist Examiners is approved by the BACB as an ACE continuing education provider. Attending a meeting of the Board's Committee on Behavior Analysts is eligible for continuing education credit for maintenance of BACB certification and for Arizona licensure renewal. To claim this credit, make note of the code words provided hourly throughout the meeting by board staff. To report the code words to board staff for purposes of earning an education credit, look for the link on the board's meeting page for this particular meeting. So, next agenda item is approval of minutes. Do I have a motion to approve those?
So moved.
Second.
Do I have a second? Okay.
Second.
Thank you. Any discussion? Okay, all in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Opposed? Okay, the motion carries. All right, the next agenda item is a discussion, consideration, possible action regarding recommendations to the board for the following matters. Regarding this, before we initiate the complaint review, I'll be sharing some information for those participating today. Please note that a person or representative of a person who has filed or is subject to the complaint and present today may make a brief statement up to 5 minutes to the committee when prompted by me. The committee may also have questions for the complainant or respondent after their statement. Only individuals directly involved with the complaint, which are the complainant and respondent, may address the committee and make a statement. If the committee wishes to hear from any other party, it will make this request during the case review. For everyone in attendance today, please be sure your audio remains on mute. When prompted by the committee to speak, the complainant, respondents, and their legal representatives may unmute themselves at that time. Please note that individuals in attendance who speak out without committee approval will be warned twice by me not to interrupt. If the interruption continues after the second warning, the individual will be removed from the Zoom meeting and not permitted to re-enter the meeting. Please only use initials for patients, or children and the complainant. Be aware that the content of many records involved in these complaints is confidential and the content should not be discussed in public meeting. The committee may go into executive session to discuss any confidential records or to receive confidential legal advice from the board's attorney, Jean Galvin. For this item, Dr. Rates is accused or accused, recused. Sorry, Dr. Rates. We'll begin by hearing the complaint numbers 24-28 and 29 and T-24-01 related to Ashley Horton, LBA, Nicole Lepowski, who is a behavior analyst applicant, and Deidre L. Evans, who's a non-licensee, all respectively. I'm the assigned lead, and I'll provide an overview of this case. And I wanted to note, while these complaints are filed individually, I will summarize the three as a whole and then address each individually as a board, or excuse me, as a committee. So again, we're the see, let me pick up where. Okay, so. In the complaint, in the findings, Ms. Horton's position was listed as an assessment BCBA, was employed from July of 23 to December of 23. Ms. Lepowski was listed as a center director from July of 23, and Ms. Evans was listed as treating BCBA from July of 23 to June of 24. The complainant MD is a senior program development manager for DES's Department of Developmental Disabilities. The complaint reported that I'm concerned about overall quality of care, have requested documentation multiple times. When I did receive the documentation, it was not timely. When further information was requested, the provided information or the provided informed of discharge. Other concerns included that Ms. Evans is the treating behavior analyst who signed one of their patients, KQ's treatment plan is LVA. However, she's not licensed to practice in Arizona, but does hold a license in Virginia. Ms. Lepowski is the clinical director, but she does not hold a license to practice in Arizona at this time. And as I mentioned earlier, is an applicant to become licensed in the state. Services were billed by Ms. Horton, who has not participated in any care coordination or ongoing treatment for KQ. The client's legal guardian and planning team were not aware of ABA services that those were in fact initiated. Regarding the replies from the licensees or the defendants, I'll say it that way. Complaint number 24-28 regarding Ashley Horton. Ms. Horton responded that she has no knowledge of why her name was being associated with these particular matters. Her name was used for purposes of billing, and she reported that she wasn't aware that any fraudulent billing was under her name and had no knowledge that they were in fact using her name. She's also concerned that these entities may have well been using her name as a treating provider in other instances where she had no connection with those activities or where she had concluded her work performing the assessments and developing treatment plans but had no connection with ongoing therapies. There was an email from one of the staff from the agency in which Ms. Horton was employed, indicating that, and if you want to look at this, it's found on page 51 of the 151 of the PDF. In the case that they do not imply or officially list Ms. Horton as a supervising BCBA LVA on the cases, Ms. Miller also stated that she used her name since she was the first BCBA contracted, thus they billed under her, concluding with an apology that Ms. Horton is listed on the complaint and shouldn't have been, and the board and that the board states that they do not deal with complaints regarding billing or jurisdiction to rule them. Response from complaint number 24-29, Nicole Lepowski. Ms. Lepowski responded that she did obtain her BCBA in May of 2019. At the time related to the complaint, she was living and practicing in Georgia, which did not require a license to participate as a behavior analyst. On July 31st of 2023, Ms. Lepowski applied for licensure in Arizona. Since that time, she's been in frequent contact with the licensing specialist to gather the necessary documents. Ms. Horton applied for licensure the same month she was hired by the agency. The deficiency notice was sent to Ms. Lepowski in September of 2023, at the time the complaint was received in January 2024. Ms. Lepowski's application was still incomplete. On January of 2024, Ms. Malice, one of the board staff, reminded Ms. Lepowski of this fact. The required information was not received until months later. As a clinical director for SWAN, Ms. Lepowski has not had direct supervision caseload. Her responsibilities have included creating and implementing programming procedural standards, creating assessment treatment plans, planning templates, and assisting general policy creation for this company. She indicated that she has not indicated any direct provision of applied behavior analysis, but does provide managerial guidance to her team, which includes the RVT, Tiffany, named in the complaint. MD also stated that that Tiffany Williams told her that Ms. Lepowski is one of her supervisors, and Ms. Lepowski affirmed that that's actually the case, but she was not aware of any client programming that's going on. And then in regard to complaint number 20-24-01, Deidre Evans, who is a BCBA but is not licensed in Arizona, she apparently signed off on the client's treatment plan as an LVA, but she's not licensed to practice in Arizona. She does hold a license in Texas and Virginia, and she now understands the confusion when she provided her credentials and a signature as an MA, BCBA, LVA in the documentation. Since then, she's removed her LVA label. Ms. Evans has not practiced behavior analysis independently in any service provided at the agency, and and was supervised by Ashley Horton, the supervising BCBA. And this ends my summary at this time. Does any of the committee members have any questions for me? Okay. Dr. Davey.
When I was looking at the org chart that was in there, there were several other BCBAs listed within the org chart. Only one I saw had a distinction of LBA. Did you also note that in your review of those?
I did notice that as well. Yes, Dr. Davey, thank you.
And yeah. I did go through and pull a couple. I just randomly selected, I think, four names, and 50% of those were not listed under as having active licenses in the state of Arizona. And so I think that as we proceed with this discussion, it may need to expand a bit more based on our review of those names.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Davey. And then if it isn't brought up, would you be willing to remind us, the committee, to do that? Okay, thank you. Okay, all right, is the complainant MD present? I do see an MD initial here, but.
Good morning. Yeah.
Yeah, thank you. So yeah, would you please state your initials for the record? And this is your opportunity to make a brief statement up to 5 minutes, and the committee may have questions for you after you finish your statement.
Yes, my initials are MD. I do not have a statement, but I'm available for any questions the committee may have.
Okay, great. Thank you. Committee members, does anybody have any questions for MD? Dr. Byra.
Thank you, Dr. Senhoff. I couldn't find the hand raise button. Sorry for that. MD, I saw in the documentation that you did make several records requests. I'm just curious if you received any additional documentation other than the initial authorization request.
There were significant delays, particularly when I requested the informed consent paperwork. It was not sufficient. And then I was told that, to stop asking questions. And then I reminded kind of the DES's responsibility for overseeing ABA services. So I would say that there was significant delays in obtaining that information.
Okay. Did you specifically request session notes or progress data, anything of that nature, discharge reports?
I did request data and session notes. I did receive kind of just a chart of ABC data for the particular member. But as I mentioned in my complaint, as we started to look into this further, there were concerns that this is occurring with multiple members. And so my obligation at that point is to refer it to FWA and OIG, and that's kind of where I stopped.
Okay, thank you very much.
Dr. Davey?
I just wanted to follow up on a statement that MD made. Who requested that you stop asking questions?
Whenever, per kind of our policies and access policies, whenever there are concerns with FWA or OIG, those matters are referred, and then I made my ethical obligation to report to this board. It's not my job to investigate.
So just backing up, when you were requesting records from the agency did not, and by agency, I mean the provider agency, they did not ask you to stop requesting records.
I did have an email from the owner of the agency, who I do not believe is a BCBA, that I believe I provided in the content of the complaint, where I was asking for information, and I was instructed that it does not fall under DDD because it's being billed through the health plans, and it was not my responsibility to ask. I can pull up the email and pull the language.
No, there's no need. I just wanted to know where that where that request came from. I appreciate it. Thank you.
MD, regarding the contact you had, were you directly contacting or in contact with Ms. Horton? I'll start there.
No, I had requested her email and I was informed that she no longer works with the agency. And so once I received the treatment plan and I noticed that Deidre was listed as the person who completed the treatment plan, I was contacting them. And then we had several staffings regarding this situation because it was crisis. And that's where Nicole was kind of looped in as the director.
Okay. And Nicole being Ms. Lepowski, Nicole Lepowski, is that correct?
Yes, sir.
And then Deidre being Deidre Evans, correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Just a clarification on that. All right. Thank you. Any further questions for MD? Okay. So I know that Ms. Horton and counsel, Mr. Rain, are both here. So would you both unmute yourselves and state your names for the record? And again, this is the opportunity for you to make a statement, you and your attorney, and up to 5 minutes, and the committee might have questions for you afterwards as well.
You. This is Michael Rain, counsel for Ms. Horton.
I'm A.H.
And Ms. Horton, on your side, you're going to have to provide your full name for this.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Since you're not the complainant. Okay, thank you.
Sorry. Sorry about
that. Thank you.
No, you're fine. You're fine.
And just very briefly, we're here to answer questions. As I think the summary correctly stated our position, that Ms. Horton did not provide any of the services. We see the corroboration of that in the file. She's here to help in any way she can or to answer any questions you may have. But we do believe that a dismissal of Ms. Horton would be appropriate.
Thank you, Mr. Rain. And Ms. Horton, do you have any further comments?
No further comments, no.
Okay. All right. Thank you. All right. So do any committee members have questions for Ms. Horton or counsel? And Ms. Horton, Mr. Rain stated this in his statement, but is in brief, to what extent did you have any contact with the complaint that was filed or with the client that the complaint was filed regarding from MD?
I had no contact with the client listed. I was unaware that my information was being used for that client in particular. So yeah, no contact with the client whatsoever.
And okay. If I could jump in, Ashley, if you could describe for them your contact with the facility in terms of the complaint.
Oh, yes. Once I received the complaint, I contacted them to ask what was going on. And then at that point, that's when I was told that my credentials were being used, because I was the first BCBA to be contracted with the funding sources. And even though I had no contact with a specific client in particular.
Dr. Davey?
Thank you. Have you gone into your CAQH portal and updated it and removed any of your previous agencies that you've been working for? And kind of started to clean up your provider profile, if you will, so that this can't continue with, you know, I'm not saying that the agency has not or has not done a good faith removed you, but this is a a lesson for all of us that, you know, the longer you stay on as somebody, as a providing, as a rendering provider for somebody on your CAQH file or on any other credentialing websites for any of the funders, there is the possibility that your MPI number could be used for billing purposes. And so just wondering if you've had a chance to kind of, you know, we talk about like identity theft. Have you had a chance to kind of like go in and clean up your file? And if not, I would just strongly encourage that you take the time to log in and get any previous employers removed from your CAQH file.
Yes, sir. Yeah. Yes, I have been more vigilant about removing past employers and making sure that my contact information is for that company is no longer on my account. Yes.
Very good.
Yeah, thank you.
Are there any further questions for Ms. Dr. Byra?
Dr. Sunhoff, just to tag along with Dr. Davies, along with your access portal as well. So not just your I always forget the initials. Sorry, Dr. Davies. The one that Dr. Davies said, but also your access portal.
Yeah,
trying to make sure that everything is in line and correct and up to date so that way no one else can access my information. Yes, thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Byard. Okay, are there any other questions for Ms. Horton, counsel, or MD before we move into deliberation? Okay. So we're going to move into deliberation at this point. Please note that deliberation is the time for committee members to deliberate the case among themselves without interruption from complainants, licensees, or attorneys representing licensees. I'll begin the deliberations. Based on the information that I saw in the records and the comments that were made by both by MD and Ms. Horton counsel, I'm just going to put forth a motion at this time to recommend to the board that this be dismissed at this point. So there's my motion.
Yeah, I'll go ahead and second that. Maybe we can have discussion with that motion on the floor.
Okay, so we have a second. Any discussion? Dr. Byra.
My one thought is, I know that she did not have Ms. Horton, sorry, not she, but Ms. Horton didn't have further contact after those initial assessments. But I do think, just as a fair warning, like if you're doing an assessment as a licensed behavior analyst, that assessment's going to go somewhere. So I guess just a note of caution, maybe just doing our due diligence as behavior analysts of like where is this client going, who is going to take over this case. I mean, ideally, if I did an assessment and someone took over that authorization, I'd want to be available for questions and things like that, and have some kind of collaboration, coordination of care. And if we don't know where that assessment is going after we do it, I just think we need to take a little bit of accountability of where that client's care is going. We shouldn't be policing the LBA portion, but I think there should be some collaboration of care following that.
Thank you, Dr. Byra. Okay, any other comments? Okay, so there's been a motion to recommend to the board for dismissal, a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, motion carries. All right, thank you, Ms. Horton and Mr. Ray, for being here. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so we'll now move on to complaint number 24-29 for Ms. Lepowski. As a note again, that her application is pending and we're considering that as well today. I've already done the summary for this. MD, do you have any further comments in regard to this particular complaint?
No, I don't.
Okay. All right. Okay, so Ms. Lepowski, I note that you're here, would you please unmute your mic and state your name for the record, and provide a brief statement up to 5 minutes. And again, as I said earlier, we may have some follow-up questions for you as well.
Absolutely. So my name is Nicole Lepowski.
A brief statement, I am fully committed to cooperating in any way that the board sees fit to resolve this issue, not just for myself, but also for the other analysts in our organization, so that issues like this don't arise in the future. I do want to make it clear that I was not in this director role at the time of this, at the onset of this client services. So I'm not sure how much information I'll be able to provide about the case itself, but I am happy to answer any questions you might have to clear up any confusion and provide, of course, any additional information needed for the complaint.
Okay, thank you. Does anybody have any questions for Ms. Lepowski? So, Ms. Lepowski, just you mentioned at the onset of this, you weren't the center director, and does that mean that at a point in time you became the center director over KQ, over the center, but then also, of course, you'd be the center director over KQ's services, right?
That is correct. I was brought on as an analyst, and then I was asked to take the role of clinical director. Yes.
Okay, and then I did note in the documentation that. That as a clinical director, you weren't necessarily providing any advisory information to other BCBAs regarding their cases. Would you characterize as just strictly administrative?
Absolutely administrative.
Okay. Dr. Byron.
On that note, I'm looking at the email that you sent back on September 16th to Ms. Michelson and some of the job duties you outline here. You know, you do talk about switching staff and kind of some scheduling kind of thing, but you also do speak to quality assurance of regularly evaluating BCBA and BHT session notes, ensuring data collection software is used appropriately, providing mentorship as needed. Are you disagreeing that those are not behavior analytic in nature, those tasks?
No, ma'am, I wouldn't disagree with that. I agree that what you're saying sounds much more behavior analytic than the way that I might have presented it. Yes, there is what I think what I meant to express is more of the actual clinical processes that the BCBA themselves would do, like their day-to-day tasks as far as treatment planning and programming. When I am doing kind of quality assurance review, I'm more of looking at like a rubric of things that we would like to see in the session notes. Like if a client takes a nap during the day, are those times adequately described in the note? Is the note completely filled out? Are we getting all of the information that we need? Even with mentorship, I typically am more of like providing resources. If a BCBA says, I have a client that has this specific need, I'm happy to provide resources so that they can find additional training, additional CEUs, things like that. So yes, to answer your question, absolutely, I agree. But it wasn't directly treatment planning.
Okay. And then I'm looking at a series of emails from January 2024, and we're looking kind of about how to proceed with KQ's treatment. And it's you and Ms. Evans on the email, and then Ms. Miller, who's not a BCBA. So the discussions between the three of you, I guess, who's the licensed BCBA that's then providing the clinical oversight to that decision?
At the time, the overseeing BCBA, the LBA for the organization, her name was Suzette Morrison, but she is no longer with our organization. So we do now have a new supervising BCBA who is an LBA, and he meets regularly with all of the BCBAs to discuss the cases. I want to say he meets with them monthly to kind of provide that kind of oversight.
Okay. I'm just seeing an absence of her, you know, presence in all these email chains that keep going through. So I'm just curious, at what point was she consulted? What was her role? How much feedback was she giving to yourself and Ms. Evans about this case? Because I don't see her, like I said, I don't see her CC'd or any replies from her here. So I'm just trying to figure out was she consulted for this case in particular.
Right. I'm not 100% sure that she was consulted for this case at all. I can't say that she was.
Okay. That's all I have for now.
Dr. Byron. Any other questions? Dr. Davey.
So I think my question is going to be just much more to the point. I think what I need to know, Ms. Lepofsky, is were you practicing behavior analysis in the state of Arizona without a license? Because my reading through this suggests that that answer is yes. Do you agree, disagree with that statement? Because I think that'll get us moving in the right direction of like what needs to happen going forward.
Absolutely. I personally did not feel that I was. Obviously, listening to the questions that you guys have, if the board agrees that my role was more behavior analytic, then I would defer to you.
Well, I think that I don't want you to defer to us. Like part of this discussion is understanding what activities you're engaged in, right? So behavior analytic practice involves supervising others, giving case conceptualization, talking about whether or not treatment is heading in the right direction, modifying treatment goals, modifying treatment approaches, giving feedback on types of assessment that should be conducted, assessments that outcomes from assessment and what that tells us with regard to selecting a treatment package, ongoing feedback to the team, all of those activities are behavior analytic in nature, right? Those all are pieces of those. And from what I'm hearing and what I'm reading, those were clearly activities that you were engaged in. You may not have been with the client one-on-one providing direct service. You may not have even been conducting, 971555, where you are, essentially doing protocol modification right there on the spot with a direct therapist. But all of the other activities that you've outlined clearly suggest that you were engaged in those behavior analytic activities. And I think that then constitutes, you practicing in the state without a license. And that, that is kind of where I see us at this particular point. I appreciate you believing that those were not behavior analytic, but I think I think both the BACB documentation about what activities are considered appropriate in supervision would back up our discussions around this. I'm sure Dr. Byra has a list of things she could probably add to that as well that backs us up, including other professional documentation that this board relies on in terms of the standard of care and the standard of practice in the state of Arizona. So I appreciate your comment, but I think at the end of the day, I don't think it's you deferring to us. I think what matters is us, you coming to the realization that was probably a misunderstanding or a miscalculation or a misreading of the rules and statutes or a lack of reading the rules and statutes in the state of Arizona. I have no further questions at this time. I just don't know. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. David. Dr. Byron.
Just my one final question is, we saw, that you applied to get your license, but, it's still not complete or was not complete. I just curious, I guess, more than anything, why we didn't do that faster. Why did we not respond to the requests of board staff and get your application sorted starting from July, 2023?
I had a lot of difficulty getting the forms that I needed from my previous fieldwork supervisors. So I think even in my documentation, I provided some information of trying to contact one of my supervisors in particular. So that definitely had a huge impact on me being able to get everything turned in on time.
Ms. Lepofsky, Dr. Davey was asking some questions regarding practicing without a license. I note in the org chart that you're in that center director role. Would you agree that practicing without a license is still going on as described by Dr. Davey in his questions?
I would agree.
Okay. Any further questions for Ms. Lepofsky? Dr. Davey?
This is along a different line, so I will defer to my other board members if they have questions kind of around practice. I had a question around billing practices.
Okay, go ahead, Dr. Davey.
Thank you, Chair Stenhoff. So I believe I read that you have very little knowledge of like administratively what goes on in the billing on the billing office. Is that correct? You have a chief operating officer that oversees billing that is not a BCBA. Is that true? I'm assuming you use EHR system for capturing session notes based on what I saw. I believe it was Central Reach. Is that the system you're using?
At the time we were using Central Reach. As of now, we are using Rethink.
Okay. And in those systems, you have profiles built for yourself and profiles built for your employees that include their credentials, correct? Like they're a BCBA, their MPI numbers, if they have access billing ID numbers, those kinds of things that go into that system. Do you have working knowledge of that, or is that outside of your scope?
That is also outside of my scope.
Okay. And your current title is, can you restate your current title?
Clinical director.
Yeah. So I would encourage you, as with that kind of a title, that you get involved in what's going on there, because that is your team and their credentials and their NPI numbers. And as we saw with Ms. Horton previously, there appears to be some disconnect there from your operations team. And that is very concerning based on the rest of the packet that I've read through. And it leads me to believe that there is a lack of due diligence and a lack of compliance with regard to billing practices. And that is something that will devastate the career paths of all those BCBAs you have on your org chart if that comes to fruition. And so I would encourage you to get actively involved in what's going on there and provide to the point where you're comfortable, a level of understanding of what needs to happen for those billing practices. And if you're not comfortable, that the organization reach out to someone that can help them get themselves organized in a timely fashion. Because I think the most concerning part to me of all of this is that org chart where I see multiple people's names, BCBAs listed, that are going to get caught up in this discussion and this adjudication of this complaint. And that is concerning to me, knowing that we have a lack of BCBAs and licensed professionals in the state that can provide services to kids and adolescents and adults. And now we are going to put a handful of them at risk. And that does not sit well with me for multiple reasons, as I just outlined. But that is a failure not only of the organization, but then of the organization's leadership. And then you and your new role and whoever was in that role previously, that failure cannot continue.
Thank you for that feedback. And I completely agree. And I will make those changes. Absolutely. Thank you.
Dr. Byra.
Thanks, Dr. Stenhoff. I am going to piggyback on Dr. Davey a little bit, because I am looking at your org chart and I see you over everyone. And I'm not sure who you said now, who's the licensed LBA, who's kind of overseeing everybody else. If it's Mr. Gonzalez, that's the kind of the top person there. But I see, if that's the case, that he's under you. So therefore, you're his supervisor. So from a dual relationship standpoint, I see a lot of problematic issues that could be arising from there. You're his boss, but he's supposed to be overseeing your behavior analytic services, which does not sit well with me. But then under him, I see at least six other BCBAs that do not have an LBA after their name, which if we're looking at, five kids on a caseload, five clients on a case, that's 30. And I think five is probably a pretty low case number if those are full-time BCBAs. I just would like to know what this LBA is thinking, taking on the responsibility of 30, 60 clients that we are doing adequate supervision. Does he understand the ramifications that if those BCBAs walk, he's theoretically responsible for those cases? I am very concerned about the level of supervision that any one of those BCBAs at your organization is getting from one singularly licensed person and real true review, which also brings me back to Dr. Davey asked about, you know, central reach or what data collection you're doing, session notes. Who's signing those notes? I know you're reviewing them for kind of quality, but who's signing that to go back to the funder to get paid for those notes? It's not Ashley Horton, like we're billing under her for that 97153, at least for KQ, but who signed those notes?
Typically the notes are signed by the BCBA providing services and then also by Mr. Gonzalez as well. So I do absolutely hear your feedback as well, and I completely agree. So thank you for that.
Okay. That's all for now, Dr. Stenhouse. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Any further questions for Ms. Lepofsky? And board staff, I'm gonna put you all on the spot. So I apologize. Quick question: could you just a brief summary of the current status of the application?
Ms. Lepofsky's pending application.
Yeah.
It's my understanding that it is administratively complete, but I will defer to Ms. Malice if there's any other details that I may be missing.
Okay. We can come back. I'm actually going to request that we go into executive session for legal advice.
Second.
Thank you. All right. Discussion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Into executive session. Okay, it's 10:33, and so we'll at this time. Are there any further questions for Ms. Lepofsky? Okay, so as I stated earlier, we're going to move into deliberation. It's a time for the committee to talk amongst themselves without interruption from complainants. From complaints or other members of the community, licensees, and in this case, people that are applying for licensing. I'll begin the deliberation at this point. So I think we clearly have identified that there was a practice violation, practicing without a license. We have, just both documentation and through our questioning, we also found that out. And we also have some concerns, or at least I know some concerns that relate to the org chart, the job duties of Ms. Lepofsky and so on. At that point, those are the primary concerns that I have, or at the top of the list, I'll say it that way. And then, go ahead and turn over to other committee members that might have some further comments.
I mean, I think you, Dr. Stenhouse, Mr. Chair, I think that you summarized them. I think that, to kind of echo around those concerns is what's going on, what's continued to go on in terms of practice as this matter has kind of now worked its way through initial review and that the complaint has been out there. And the fact that we, have kind of gone through this period of time from the complaint till now where practice has continued by Ms. Lepofsky, even without a license, that there hasn't really been, any kind of a real correction around that from her understanding of what, at that particular point was behavior analytic and not. And I think so, one of the things that I'm concerned about as we continue to move forward is what is her operational practice look like tomorrow? What does her job description look like tomorrow and going forward? And how she's going to rectify that with the fact that she's not licensed in the state as of today. And even if her license was pushed forward for an approval to the full board, there's still another week before that license would be active. And so we've got this period of time where the reality is that she's not licensed and therefore cannot practice in the state. And that practice extends to those that are under her supervision. And so that is something that the the applicant, Ms. Lepowski, will have to take into consideration as we continue through this deliberation.
Dr. Nathan. Any other comments? So do we have a motion at this point?
I mean, I think at this point, Mr. Stenhoff or Dr. Stenhoff, Mr. Chair, you know, the reality is like there are some questions that we still need answered, I think, and I think we probably need those answered from a licensed behavior analyst that works at the organization that is overseeing some of these cases and is a licensed behavior analyst. So we could work on, we could essentially table this matter and move towards some questions and a subpoena to Mr. Gonzalez to gain some other insights into what's going on in terms of practice, which would be one of our, you know, would be an option that I would be open to. But I don't see how we adjudicate, I don't see how we, sorry, this would be a motion, I guess it's more, I'm more thinking out loud, but I don't see how we approve this application today. And so I think that my motion would be to table this matter, to instruct board staff to reach out to Mr. Gonzalez through a subpoena and to send some pretty straightforward questions to gain some information about, one, the supervisory nature between Ms. Lepowski and Mr. Gonzalez, given the org chart. At a minimum, I think that that's one question. I'm sure Dr. Byra and others may have insights as to other questions they would like to ask, but I think we can formulate that with board staff and then come back in a month and hopefully have Mr. Gonzalez in front of us with his answers so that we can move forward.
All right. So, Dr. Davey, I think you said this. This is a motion. Is that correct?
Yes, motion to table the matter on the application and table the complaint and for Ms. Lepowski and subpoena licensed behavior analyst Gonzalez and provide some questions that we can work with board staff to formulate. So that we are better informed to move forward with this matter.
Okay. All right. Do I have a second? Okay. All right, Dr. Byra, we couldn't quite hear, but I think I saw you say second.
Oh, sorry, second. Yes.
Okay. All right. Any further discussion on this?
Just that, given Dr. Byra's expertise around particular supervision matters and clinically, like her current position, I think she'd be the one that board staff would really want to lean on some of these questions. Not to volunteer you, Dr. Byra, but I have a lot of respect for you in that area, and so I just think that that would be something that you would help could help board staff with.
Happy to do so.
Okay, motions to table the complaint and the application at this point to bring Mr. Gonzalez in for getting some additional information from him and having it before the committee. We have a second. All in favor say aye.
If I could clarify, I think the motion also said issue him a subpoena and send him questions that Dr. Byra will work with staff on.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Gowan. Yep. Okay. And so, Dr. Byra, does your second still stand?
Yes, second.
Okay. All right. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. Motion carries. Board staff, I'm assuming, just as I talked to Ms. Lepowski, that you all will be in contact with her, kind of letting her know next steps. And okay.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
All right. And thank you for being here, Ms. Lepowski. Appreciate it. So,
absolutely. Thank you.
Ms. Malice. Is Ms. Malice still on? I saw her.
Mr. Chair, there she is. Okay.
Mr. Chair, are you able to hear me now?
Yes.
I'm sorry. The first code word is Pac-Man. It's Pac-Man. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. MD, or I noticed you're still on here. We are going to address Ms. Evans' complaint now. Do you have anything further to state at this point?
Nothing further at this point, but again, still here available for questions.
Okay, thank you. So Ms. Evans, please unmute yourself, state your full name for the record. And this is an opportunity for you to make a brief statement up to 5 minutes, and we may have some additional questions for you after your statement.
Hello, my name is Deidre Evans. I'm a BCBA, not licensed in Arizona, but I'm licensed in Texas and Virginia. So that is where the confusion came in about the LBA. I just first want to state that I do understand completely the gravity of my actions and not doing my due diligence as a behavior analyst to make sure that I'm in compliance with, you know, all things as far as my role and within my practice of the organization that I'm working in. And that is my responsibility to be sure that I am, you know, within compliance and being supervised if needed, you know, appropriately by someone that is licensed. And I failed to do that adequately. And I do understand that. And I also want to say I just apologize to Ms. Horton for any confusion that I may have caused. When this complaint came in, I had a meeting with Ms. Lepowski and the owner of the company about just like some confusion about, you know, not being in compliance with things. And that's where I was directed that Ms. Horton was the agency BCBA. So I listed that she was the supervising BCBA. She was listed as the agency BCBA as what I was told. So that's why I listed her as such. But Nicole was my direct supervisor in this role. So essentially my role as BCBA with the company was of a mid-tier type of supervisor where I was to be supervised by another BCBA in the role. And initially when I did come on to this role, there was another, as Ms. Lepowski stated, there was another Arizona licensed BCBA. And I got in contact with him originally because I said, you know, Arizona, I was told by the owner that we were going to be supervised by Arizona BCBA. So we were able to practice. And I reached out and I had a conversation with him and he said, yes, if you're, you know, supervised by an Arizona BCBA, who is the agency BCBA, who's your supervising clinician, you can practice in this role. And that was the initial conversation. So I thought that I was within compliance. Very shortly after he left, that's when Ms. Lepowski took over as clinical director and she, you know, essentially served as my supervisor. Like I said, I was also told that there were other supervisors, as you know, Ms. Horton, who were the agency BCBA. It's just a little kind of confusion on the exact structure organization, but Ms. Lepowski was my clinical supervisor. And then, you know, I don't know if she had other supervisors above her, but she was my essentially direct supervisor in this role.
Thank you, Ms. Evans.
Yes.
Any questions for Ms. Evans? Dr. Byron.
You mentioned Ms. Lepowski became your supervisor after the other one left. Were you aware that Ms. Lepowski was not licensed here in Arizona?
And that's where I say I didn't do my due diligence. It wasn't a conversation or anything. It was just that she was my clinical director and we met and we were supervised. Like I said, I was told she wasn't the only, you know, BCBA as well. So like I said, that was on me that I didn't go any further to confirm. I met with the first, because I was concerned when I first joined the company, I met with the first clinical director and we had a conversation and he said, you know, you're going to be supervised. There's, you know, the BCBA supervisor, I'm LBA. So like I say, I should have took that a step further when Nicole took over as the supervisor to confirm that as well, but I did not.
Okay. In terms of Ms. Lepowski's supervision, when I'm looking at, we didn't get a lot of documentation in terms of what was submitted for client KQ, but we did get some case management reviews, and I only see your name on this. Was that reviewed by anybody else at the agency, being an LBA or Ms. Lepowski? The initial assessment report, I only see your name on it. Like, was anyone at any point reviewing your work when you were at the agency?
Like I said, to my knowledge, I know that Ms. Lepowski was my supervising clinician that would review my work. What I was told was that I was like a mid-tier. There were other supervisors. Mm-hmm. So from the conversation, I took from it that like additionally, maybe like Ms. Horton or other, I don't know if this was actually happening, but that the person that was billing as the supervisor was the one that would go and like do another review of things.
You didn't sit down and look at KQ's plan and say, here's what I did. And they give any kind of feedback, a yay or nay, or have you thought about this? Or have we considered that component? Like, did you just thought it was going to be like a review, like by themselves with no feedback coming back to you? Like, did you ever have a sit down with anyone at the agency to review any of your work, either telehealth or?
Like I said, the only supervisor that I would meet with was Ms. Lepowski. And then we did have a review committee that like plans and things would be sent to be reviewed and get feedback and things like that. But things like such as feedback, reviewing things, I would meet with Ms. Lepowski.
Okay. That's all I have right now, Mr. Chair.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Byer. Any other questions?
Chair.
Yeah, Dr. Davey.
Thank you. Can you give us the time that you were in the time frame again that you were engaged with Arizona clients? The time frame?
June of 2023 to around May of 2024.
So just under a year.
I'm sorry, what was that?
So just under a year.
Yes. Yes, sir.
Okay. And during that time, how many clients do you think you engaged with by either reviewing their documentation, providing feedback, conducting assessments, writing authorizations?
I cannot give an exact number. There were some, you know, times that I wasn't actually the supervisor, but, you know, clients that I had very short, maybe in total, like 12, but I cannot say that number definitively.
We'll say it's your best guess. Thank you for that. And so 12 clients, we'll just say around about approximately 12-ish clients for just over the course of 11 months. Okay. And during that time, as you stated earlier, you did not do your due diligence to make sure the person that you were submitting information to was actually licensed. But I want to go back to something you stated at the beginning. You noted that the owner of the agency or somebody at the agency had said to you, listen, we understand that, you know, and I'm paraphrasing here, we understand that licensure is required, and so therefore you're going to be working under a licensed behavior analyst. Who told you that, and how was it communicated? Was that communicated verbally, an email? Evidence do we have of that conversation?
Yeah, so the first interaction was kind of like in the first interview, which was over Zoom call. And then additionally after that, after the role was like discussed more and talked about, I reached out to the owner via email about the question that, you know, Arizona is a state that requires licensure, and I want to make sure that I'm, you know, being in compliance with that. And I didn't get a response back, but I didn't take it anyway, because I knew there were things going on. I didn't think that I was being actively ignored. I didn't think that at the time. I'm not sure. But I then reached out directly to the person that was supposed to serve as the clinical director at the time, who was
I know was a Arizona BCBA, and he told me via email, you know, you'll be fine. You'll be supervised by Arizona BCBA. It is within, you know, Arizona licensure that, you know, as long as you're supervised efficiently, that you are in compliance. So I
do you have those communications still?
I do.
I would then vote that we.
And I want to, I'm sorry, very quickly, I know as far as like looping in like Mr. Gonzalez, I will say, and I will, and I am happy to, you know, send anything or anything like that. The LBA, I don't even think that he even served on the role even long, like at any point, like maybe within like 2 or so weeks, that's when Ms. Lepowski took on the role. So he was the initial contact that I had. Like I said, I have that email. I can send that to you for sure. And then very shortly after, that's when Ms. Lepowski took on the role, and she was the like direct contact. So this person, he, I'm not sure like how much, how long he served as the clinical director or the director, shall I say, but I'm happy to provide that information.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I think we should go ahead and request that information or any of the correspondences that that Ms. Evans has had with the organization, the owner, related to her supervision in the role that she accepted. I think that that's going to weigh heavily on at least me with regard to how we adjudicate this matter. I'm not suggesting that Ms. Evans should not have continued to press the issue, knowing that she needed to make sure that she was in compliance with Arizona state law. However, I would like to, you know, it well play into the fact that it will play into my ultimate individual recommendation around what our next steps might be with Ms. Evans, to kind of be able to see some of that due diligence that was going on and what those responses or lack of responses looked like.
Thank you, Dr. Davey. I would agree. Does anybody have any more questions for Ms. Evans?
One other question, Ms. Evans, you state the owner. Who is the owner?
I'm not sure who. There's Pamela Miller and Amy. What's Amy's last name?
And these are individuals that you have email correspondences with. Because when you say like you're emailing with the owner, I'm just interested to know who this quote unquote owner is that's providing you or not providing you responses. But if that's going to be, maybe that can be part of our question back to you or our email back to you from board staff of like, we're requesting emails that that essentially support that you were having the conversation around what licensure looked like in Arizona and how you were going to be protected by the agency or the agency structure. And then any correspondences that you feel might also shed light on how you were, how information was being conveyed and by whom, and whom these owners were, you know, and their roles in the organizations. I think that those would be helpful to this committee to be able to move forward with recommendations.
Okay. And I definitely have emails as far as, like I said, those initial emails when I did come onto the role and had those correspondences. Like I said, I did reach out to the owner about that. I didn't get a response. That's when I reached out to the person that was going to serve as the clinical director. I have those in my original email. Any correspondence after that, like as in my role, I did within my agency email, which I'm not working at the agency right now, so I don't have access to anything further than that. But I do have emails from when I initially came on into the role. And I'm happy to, you know, send whatever I have in alignment with that.
That would be appreciated. Thank you.
Any further questions from Ms. Evans? Dr. Pyra?
My only other question is, you know, I see your license in Virginia. I see your license in Texas. I'm more familiar with Texas because I'm also licensed there. I guess if you're familiar with the Texas licensure, it is quite similar to ours in terms of it very clearly states that you can't practice without being licensed. You can't use the title of behavior analyst unless you hold the license. Even if you're out of state, you can't be doing more than 20 days per calendar year. I guess if you're licensed in other states that have very similar statutes that we do, I guess, one, why didn't you apply either through reciprocity or regular application to be licensed here? Or knowing how strict other states are, I guess not be a little bit more diligent in your practice here, especially when you switch supervisors.
Yes, I definitely understand that. And it's noted that initially I was probably months before I took this role, there was an application for me to apply for the Arizona licensure with another company. They initiated it before I even accepted the role. They initiated it. And I was asked about that in the questioning, and I didn't take the role with that company. That's why I didn't move forward. And simply, like I say, that was completely my own fault Like, I really don't have any excuse about why I did not go for it with my own due diligence. When I got licensed in Texas, I had just become licensed as a behavior analyst and I was moving to Texas. So I just moved there and, was going to practice. When I took this role, my thought as well was that eventually, after getting settled into the role, that I was going to relocate to Arizona. And when I relocated, that I would also, go ahead and do the licensure. But when I came on and started asking those questions and was told that, how we're practicing is within that you're going to be supervised, I did not go forward with, being the urgency that was needed to, go through with Arizona licensure, which I say, again, that was my own. I should have, done that. Like you said, being licensed in Texas, being licensed in Virginia, I should have, went ahead and did that. I did go and look at the, I started and or I looked at the requirements and started to reach out to my supervisors, my previous supervisors, and I didn't get like that initial, I think I reached out like two times to reach out to a supervisor and she didn't follow up. So honestly, like I say, that stunted me. I thought I was, practicing within, and that was my own fault and my own, and I take responsibility and accountability for failing to do that.
Any other questions, Ms. Evans? Okay, Dr. Davey, you made a statement earlier. Would you care to put that in a motion?
Absolutely. I make the motion that we table this matter and that we, at board staff, work with Ms. Evans to obtain the emails of which she still has access to from her personal account to the agency's ownership as it relates to discussions around her supervision by a licensed behavior analyst in the state of Arizona. And any other information that Ms. Evans feels would be beneficial for this committee to see in terms of her due diligence as she was trying to align herself in a proper fashion to be able to operate in the state of Arizona.
Dr. Davey, if I may, we brought up, and I don't know, maybe this is outside, so legal advice would be helpful, but you also mentioned the COO, Pamela Miller, actually Ms. Evans did. Do we want to possibly bring those levels in, or do we want to just keep it with Mr. Gonzalez and the interactions or the correspondence that Ms. Evans had?
I'm open. I think the more information, probably the better.
Ms. Galvin, is there any legal issues with that?
No, you can invite them in as collateral to the investigation. Okay. You may wish to authorize staff to issue subpoenas if necessary.
Um, I'd like to make a friendly amendment to Dr. Davies' list then as well to that. Okay. Do I have a second?
Oops, second.
Okay. Any further discussion? I'd like to just make a quick comment. Ms. Evans, I appreciate you being here to answer these questions. And I think through the questioning, it's been very helpful for the committee to get a better understanding of kind of the nature of what was going on during your practice. So I do appreciate you being here for that. So
thank you.
All right. So we have a motion second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Okay, motion carries. All right. Okay, and board staff, does everybody have, are you all set with the notes or moving forward? Good. Okay. All right, so we've been going for about an hour and a half now. Let's take a quick comfort break until 11:10, and then we'll reconvene at that point. Reconvene. So we are on agenda item number 6, discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding recommendation board for approval of behavior analyst applications. We are going to take these by one committee person at a time. And we'll start with Dr. Byra, and then Dr. Byra, you're back. You're not back. We'll wait just a moment. Okay. All right, so Dr. Byra, I started talking before I realized you weren't back on yet. So, and guess what? You're on the hot seat already. So we're going to take these by committee member. Dr. Byra, of course, I just mentioned you first. Are there any in your list that you need to pull out and discuss without? Okay, so yeah, would you go ahead and discuss that person first, and we'll go ahead and look at the rest of the group together.
So sorry, pull out the clean list or pull out the ones I need to talk about?
Pull out the one you need to discuss further, and then we'll come back and do the clean list, okay?
Okay, yes. I have three that I need to chat about. The first one is Andrea Nolt. The issue is that she does have all, she meets the hours, she meets the her education and everything like that. The issue is that she made three attempts to reach out to her prior supervisor via the BACB portal, but didn't get a response. She also tried to find her on various social media accounts with no avail. Her phone numbers that she had no longer are connected to her. I will take my committee members' lead, but I don't want to hold that against her when everything else is in order. She does have the original verification form that she sent into the BACB. So I would like to make the motion that we put it for board approval, but I wanted to just bring that to everyone's attention.
Yeah, Dr. Byra, I'd say, yeah, Dr. Davies, thumbs up. I concur with that thumb. So.
Okay. Great. I do have two more that I need to chat with. So the next one is Melissa Chappelle. She did some supervision in California, which is a non-licensure state, so that's okay. But she also did 2,000 hours in Utah. She got licensed, or she got supervision by someone there who was not licensed at the time. So we are short on hours for that. I'm not sure if Melissa's on. Ms. Chappelle's on the call. Hi.
So the 2,000 hours encompassed all of the hours from Utah and California. It was all with the same company. It's all within ACE's structure. So the agreement that I originally signed was for, like, it's multiple supervisors at one site.
Okay. I guess looking through your application and the kind of Excel grid, it was a bit challenging to determine where all those hours came from and from which supervisor. Do you have some clarity you could give us around that?
Yeah, I do apologize. I think there was some miscommunication between me and the onboarding specialist that kind of filled that out together just because of my situation of moving and being within the same company. I have like on my trackers broken down exactly like how many hours came from each specific supervisor. But the monthly sheets and the final verification sheets were all signed by one designated person. So originally that was Jennifer Arambula when I was in California. And then when I went to Utah, that became Ronald Frebray.
Okay. Cause I do have that Ronald, he's in Utah, but I see that he wasn't licensed until February 14th of 2022. And you did your hours prior to that. So I guess that's where I'm struggling as well, that if you did some of those hours.
My hours in Utah did not start until August of 2022. So that was when I relocated. So maybe that's where the confusion is. So everything prior to that occurred in California.
Okay. On the grid, it says August 1st of 2020, and that they ended on the 31st of October in 2022.
Yeah. So that was the entire range of like from, so like that original agreement, the contract that I signed with the company that was for all of the supervisors, that was the range for everybody. So I guess that was the confusion in filling out that form.
Okay. So I'm going to ask my committee members the best way to go about resolving this. I mean, I feel like I need to see it laid out in terms of where, under which supervisor they came from, during what time frame, to really make sure we've hit that 1500 by, if it was in a licensure state, that they were by someone who's licensed. If they were in California, then that's okay too. But I would feel most comfortable seeing that laid out. Miss Pakanon, sorry to interrupt you. I see your hand.
No. Dr. Barber, I'm responding or requesting, Mr. Chairman, if I can respond to that. This would be an appropriate instance for a fair. Okay. So that you provide, we're hearing the applicant's explanation, but that you need to see that documented, of course, makes perfect sense. So because she heard what you articulated, but we would send the fair would also be very explicit in terms of, you know, what she needs to supply that supports, you know, what it is that she's telling the committee.
Okay. Do I need to make a motion, Mr. Chair, to issue a fair?
Yes.
Okay. So I'd like to make a motion that we issue a fare to Ms. Chappelle so we can get more clarification about the hours and who provided them.
Okay, I got a second on that. Okay, Dr. Davis seconded. And Dr. Rates. All right, any discussion? Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, motion carries.
Wait, am I okay to move on to my third one?
Yeah, keep on going. Yep.
Okay, great. The third one, oh boy, me and phonics are not great, so I really do apologize, everyone. But Marciella Manzo, I'm not sure if they're on the call, but this was one where we did issue a fare based on last meeting where there was some questions about the number of hours and who was overseeing them and who was licensed. And so we did get some additional documentation where we do have a licensed behavior analyst in Arizona who did do additional hours with her post certification that will bring us to over the 1500. So with that additional information, I now find this to be administratively and substantively complete. And so I'd like to make a motion that we move it to the board for approval.
Okay. And what we'll do is all the clean ones, we'll just do an overall across all the committees.
Oh, sorry. I didn't know if I needed to like review one.
No, you're fine. This is a brand new procedure for us. So I'm grasping here myself. So.
Okay. All right. That's all it right. For me other than my clean list.
Okay. Okay. All right. Thank you. Dr. Davey.
Thank you. I just have one that I need to pull off, and that is Mr. Harrington's. Application. I believe we invited Mr. Harrington, and hopefully he was able to hang on with us for the first part of this meeting. I see that he's unmuted himself. Thank you, Mr. Harrington. I appreciate it. I just wanted to speak a little bit about the documentation going back and forth with the board with regard to your supervision at KKI, particularly within probably the feeding program. And some of the documentation around individuals not having state licensure at the time. And, you know, just trying to make sure that I understand that, because you have back and forth in that packet, this information, but then you've provided additional information with supervision also occurring at KKI where individuals were licensed. And so could you just kind of bring us up to speed in 2 minutes about what was going on in the application and how you rectified the matter?
Yes, I'm sorry about the confusion. When I initially submitted the application, I hadn't looked deeply into the Maryland LBA process. And when I looked a little more closely based on the feedback by Mrs. Malls, I found that some of the supervisors who I worked with within the feeding unit did have their LBA, and then others were billing under supervision of those with the LBA through the hospital structure. And at that point, when I was a supervisee, we were, you know, it, we didn't, my position as a behavior technician didn't really touch insurance at all, which is why when I was there, it actually never even came up, the LBA process. So does that help? I'm sorry.
Yeah. And then you've submitted. Okay. So I think that's, I understand that. And I was looking at you, it stated that they were exempt. I had done some just, you know, minimal research to be able to find that exemption and was not able to find it. Not suggesting that it's not out there, just that, you know, in my personal sleuthing did not find that. But then later on in your application, you provided three names of supervisors that were, in fact, licensed behavior analysts. Michelle Frank Crawford, Carrie Barrero, and Janice Pulcini. And with they were in fact licensed during your supervision, correct? Yes, 2004. They actually received their licenses pretty early on, it looks like.
I'm sorry. I think I may have had a miscommunication. The Janice Pulcini is in Florida.
Yes.
So she is not.
Exactly. I'm sorry. Okay. Yes. It's the two Maryland ones I'm interested in. Okay. And the reason I'm interested in that is, you know, being able to, for us to kind of adjudicate your application, the individuals that were supervising you in Maryland to be similar to Arizona needed to be licensed. And so if licensure exists, so the Florida one's fine. And that was 466.25 hours. And then Carrie and Michelle, they are both licensed in the state of Maryland. And we've got that information now. And then with that, you cross the 1500 threshold. So board staff, really, when I was looking at this prior to the meeting, you know, the questions were really around the original signatories that were listed for supervision hours, but then subsequently on Arizona's Board of Psychology forms, we have the attestation of three different individuals, two of which were in Maryland, that are in fact licensed in the state of Maryland and were licensed at the time of the supervision. And so with that information, Phil, and I appreciate you coming and talking to us, Mr. Harrington, I feel like we can move this one forward to the full board.
Dr. Davey, did you have any others besides that one? I think you just said you had the one. Okay.
That's just that one.
All right. Great. Thank you. All right. And then Dr. Rates, did you have any that you need to pull out?
I do. I have a few. The first one that I can use some support from the committee would be for applicant Dr. Karen Hans. I see that I think they are present today, so that should be helpful as well. Thank you for being here.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Yeah. So in review of the application, the only issue that I think we need to have some further discussion around is that the applicant did get their BCBA in the early days, like many of us, and they were certified in 05. At that time, they received their supervision under the intensive, so for 750 hours. And additionally, it was supervised by a clinical psychologist, not a board certified behavior analyst. While that was allowed at the time for certification by the BACB, in our rules and statutes, we need 1,500 hours supervised. So I'm looking to my fellow committee members in terms of where we land in a situation like this. If I remember correctly, we have sometimes asked if there's any additional supervision that could be provided by a licensed behavior analyst within that time frame that could make up the additional hours that don't count, unfortunately.
Dr. Race, I think your interpretation is correct, and Ms. Galvin, if there's any error on my part, but unfortunately, the way the statute's written, it does require the 1,500 hours. Well, Dr. Rach, you mentioned the psychologist aspect to it, but they're, you know, outside of that, their 1,500 hours is kind of the baseline for that. So, and then going back to your question, Dr. Hans, I don't know if you do have any additional supervision that you received or some, in another place that you worked or the current place you worked that you may have been able to have other supervision available to you or?
Since I've been a behavior analyst since 2005, I don't have any like documented supervision from that long ago because it is 20 years ago. So I did reach out to my supervisor at the time, and I have worked with other behavior analysts in different positions, but I don't have anything documented because we keep records for 7 years and then they're destroyed at that point.
Other suggestions from committee members right now, or?
I assume we're not licensed anywhere else. Sorry, Paige or Dr. Reitz. I assume we're not licensed anywhere else, Dr. Hans.
No, unfortunately, I'm in Florida and we don't have licensure yet. It's actually going this year for 2025, but we've not been, and I've been here for a large portion of my career.
Can I just ask a little bit further question? Like, have you, like in your roles in the past 5 years, have you reported up to a chief clinical officer? Have you reported up to center directors, like someone that would have been providing you clinical conception or clinical case conception?
Go ahead. In the past 5 years, I actually owned my own company, and I'm now like the chief clinical officer. I'm actually the director of behavioral health services for a large organization here in Florida. And then we're trying to start services in Arizona. So right now it's me for the last 5 years. Prior to that, yes, but not previous to that.
And so is there anyone prior to that that then could maybe attest based on our forms that you were being provided supervision that hit the criteria that we require for those to make up for those hours?
Yeah, I guess I would just need clarity on what forms, because obviously it wasn't like formal documented supervision in terms of collection of hours sorts of things. So I just want to make sure they're in a comfortable position to sign something as well.
Yeah, I mean, I'm thinking, trying to scan to one right now, but the state of Arizona Board of Psychologists Examiners to supervise their work experience, essentially there's an attestation by the supervisor who was board certified. If it was in Florida, it would just be board certified. You know, that there's evidence of behavior analytic services that were being supervised and were done at a satisfactory level of performance. So that includes like conducting behavior assessments and designing and implementing and monitoring skill acquisition, behavior reduction, programs. And it goes all the way down to some other, I think 12 different questions. And then it asks for that attestation by the person that would be your supervisor. So maybe that's a path where we could, again, take the majority of the information that we have, or all the information we have, and be able to move this forward per, by what's allowed in our statutes.
I appreciate that, Dr. Davey. I agree. I think that would be a reasonable path forward. Board staff, I think it would it be a fair, because we'd be asking for additional information?
Mr. Chair, Dr. Reitz, I think that we want to make sure that Ms. Malice is really clear on what to include in the FAIR, to effectively capture sort of where you've landed with your brainstorming.
I think we'd be looking for an attestation from a supervisor that she's had, who can comment on the supervision that she received and the behavior analytics services that she provided to account for the missing hours that we have in order to make her application complete. Did I capture that, Dr. Davey?
Yeah, specifically the supervised work experience or independent field work verification form, I think, is the one that we would want to see. It may take her two or three of them from different supervisors to recapture the hours required. But I think that is very clear of the things that, the supervision that was required, the kinds of activities that were required, and if the individual who's in good standing in the state and is a board certified behavior analyst is going to attest to that, then we could take a look at that along with other application materials to be able to come up to a conclusion on this matter.
I think I need to make a motion. Is that correct, Mr. Chair?
Yes, please.
So I will make a motion that we issue a FAIR with the information that Dr. Davey just provided to this applicant.
Do I have a second?
I'll second.
Any discussion? Okay, all in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Opposed? Okay, motion carries.
Thank you so much for being here. It's always helpful when the applicants are here so we can work through these things.
You're welcome.
Mr. Chair, I have just two more. These are more administrative errors. Do you want those now? Applicant Gretchen Williams, it appears that on the supervisor form for Heather Hayes, the last two questions that indicate was the supervisor a relative, subordinate, or employee, as well as other modifications, both were checked yes, but we did not have any additional information. I assume that that's just a administrative error that would need to be corrected in order to move this forward.
Okay. All right.
I'm here. Did you want me to respond?
That'd be great. Is that just an error? Was the supervisor?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it's an error.
So if we can get that error corrected, then we can look to move this forward. All of the other information met our standards.
Perfect. Thank you.
And then the next one I have is for applicant Charles Platt. Again, I believe this is just an administrative error, but they indicated that they hold an additional license, and they just repeated their board certification information. So it was both at the accreditation level, then also again at the license level. So I just think that needs to be removed. Is that applicant on the line?
Yes, I'm here.
Can you confirm, was that just an administrative error, adding that information to the application where it asks if you're licensed in any other places?
Yes, that was an administrative error. I shouldn't hold any additional licensure.
Okay. So if we can get that corrected, I would again say that this could get moved forward.
Absolutely.
And that's all I have. All right.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Reitz. And then as far as the other applications, the clean applications, are did you find those sufficient? Okay. All right, so can I, would somebody mind making a motion for all the, I'll call them the clean applications at this point, to move forward to the board?
So moved.
Okay. All right, do I have a second?
Second.
Okay, all in favor, say, oh, further discussion? Okay, all in favor, say aye.
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 Aye. Opposed? Okay, motion carries. All right, we'll move on to agenda item number 6B1, Amanda Metzer. Dr. Reitz, you're the lead on that.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I did review the file. I found that it was complete and met all of our requirements and would recommend that we move it forward.
Great. Thank you. Okay. Now we'll move on to agenda item number 7, discussion, consideration, possible action regarding subject matter expert presentation concerning ARS 32-21.08A3. Ms. Pacon, you're the lead on this one. Dr. Davey, yes.
Yeah, do we want to do the application on reinstatement?
Or is that- yeah. Thank you, Dr. Davey. We can... we could go ahead and do that. That's agenda item number 9. So, yeah, Dr. Davey, if you'd like to lead the discussion on that. Ms. Pacanon, yeah. Is that okay? I know I called on you. Okay, Dr. Davey.
I don't think she minds. But for the application for reinstatement, I've reviewed the materials and would like to move that our licensee be reinstated with a license to be able to practice in the state of Arizona.
Okay, great. Do I have a second?
Second.
Okay, further discussion? All right, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Okay, motion carries. All right, Ms. Pacanon, back to number 7 with you regarding the expert presentation. So we go ahead, Ms. Pacanon. We had a lot of discussion about this the last time we met. So I was thinking we could probably get through this fairly quickly. If there's questions directly for Ms. Pacanon, and I believe if Dr. Davis Wilson is amiable to receiving questions too as the presenter last time. So, Ms. Pacanon?
Right, yes, Mr. Chair, and thank you. And to your point, yes. So the purposes of this agenda item isn't to ask Dr. Davis Wilson to reiterate what was, you know, a very comprehensive presentation that she shared with the committee and with the public. All the members have had access to the content, the slides from the presentation for some time. So hopefully you've had an opportunity to consider, you know, what you heard from Dr. Davis Wilson. We're grateful that she agreed to come back really for what is the Q&A stage now of this topic. So I imagine that you formulated some questions for her and, you know, are looking forward to having some dialogue with her. But again, I think our chair is suggesting that, you know, where we sort of want to arrive at, you know, as efficiently as possible is whether to formulate any sort of recommendation that, you know, sort of articulates any particular position or, you know, how it is that not only this statute, but related statutes are to be considered by this, by the committee and by the board, just for purposes of, you know, providing better clarity to the public and to the stakeholders. So with that, I will welcome Dr. Davis Wilson for coming back and spending more time with us.
Yeah. Thank you, Dr. Davis Wilson, for being here. Do any committee members have any questions or comments related to this agenda item? Okay. Yeah, Dr. Byra.
Not sure so much it's a question. Maybe it is, or a comment. Dr. Davis-Wilson, I guess I'm wondering, do you have suggestions, like outside of these meetings, to, I think, just expand the knowledge for those who do hold a license in our state to really understand, you know, what they're signing up for when they're saying, yes, agency, I will be credentialed, you know, with various funders for this agency. And sure, people can bill under me. I think the case this morning was kind of a case to that point. I, as a behavior analyst myself, there's no way I would feel comfortable overseeing 30 to 70 clients and from a supervision capacity to really say, if one of those BCBAs who was billing under me got hit by a bus and I would therefore have to take over their case, that I would feel that I had enough, I guess, knowledge and competency around that case to be able to, you know, step in and those kind of things. And so I think from a public service announcement standpiece, I guess, how do we go about educating folks? What is really happening with their license? What is their responsibility as the license holder when people are doing, you know, kind of this mid-tier billing situation?
So, yeah, I think it's a great question. I also think that the irony of earlier parts of today and this conversation makes it a little challenge. But
if I may, can we just keep this to hypotheticals and in general without referring to any case that is still pending before the board?
Yes, sorry, Ms. Kelly.
Yes, absolutely. And so what I would say in general with regard to the ability to, well, one, to educate, I think that it goes back to the professional associations. But I did have an opportunity in the last couple of weeks to sit down with some medical directors of some health plans, because I think the other issue is the holding contingent to their own policies and procedures. I think there are unique situations, and we see this often in Florida, where there isn't licensure, but I think even when licensure exists, it's still going to happen, where the BACB has done a vast amount of work around trying to educate on this idea of kind of ghost agencies, where folks are being kind of sold on this idea of, well, if we can use your credential to get started. And we see this with like new startup companies in Florida is, and I bring up Florida because this is where it's happening the largest amount, but it and there isn't licensure, but it's this idea of these companies saying, hey, can we just it's the chicken or the egg. Can we use your credentials in order to get started? And then once we have the contracts, then we can go ahead and contract you as our BCBA. And then what ends up happening is they use the credentials, get the contracts. And then most often what we're seeing across the nation is then they're not utilizing that person at all. And instead, they're just having kind of that billing under their license. I don't think it's a mid-tier issue. I think it's kind of its own issue as far as billing goes. I think the education piece gets challenging there because the people that then need educated are the consumers and the technicians, because the technicians are unaware that their practice in absence of that LBA is a violation of the state law. And that's where it gets tricky, is because those technicians oftentimes also aren't associated with a professional association. And so I have been trying to work with the health plans on encouraging them to do some more pointed education. But again, I think the challenge then becomes, how do we get the information to the technician? Because we can send that out through the health plans, But the technicians really are the vulnerable people that don't have an idea, don't know. They're being told, oh, hey, come work in this job. Like they barely understand what a behavior analyst does. And so I think that the challenge there, specific to the mid-tier issue, is that it's not a mid-tier issue. I think that there are then unique situations where there is this mid-tier piece where we have heard things like, oh, well, it is okay to practice in Arizona so long as you're being supervised. But the reality of it is that's not really what it says. And that's not even, you know, hopefully nobody took that from my presentation either, is because the reality of it is no, you cannot practice as a behavior analyst. Now, if you're enrolled in a supervision program that meets the national standards and you're not holding yourself out as being a behavior analyst, that's very different. They're two very different things. And I think that point of clarification is likely going to be housed in, again, the professional association education. I do wonder if it's a conversation that the BACB would be willing to have, because the other kind of interesting trend is where we see a lot of these red flags. Many times these individuals aren't members of the professional association, which then again makes it very challenging to educate to this issue. So I definitely think continuing to work with the health plans on just the basics of the education, but again, also the holding people accountable, because I think that if people saw, oh, this isn't allowed versus heard it, that it probably shouldn't be allowed. I think the concept of healthcare billing really goes over the head of most behavior analysts to begin with. And we continue to see these themes of like, oh, I don't have anything to do with the billing. I don't know anything about the billing. That's done over there, you know, and we continue to see the same theme of folks not knowing what credentialing is or what credentialing accounts even exist. And so, I mean, the work can still be done through the professional association. I don't know if as a committee or board, there's any opportunity to do modules or some sort of CE program. But it's the billing piece itself is complex. And I think until people see, until they're running into feedback, until they're able to get feedback from the people that have the ability to provide the feedback, I think we're going to continue to see this because of the complexity of healthcare billing.
I'm going to step in just really quick, Dr. Byer, if you got, Ms. Mouse, would you share the next code word for us, please?
Yes, Mr. Chair. The next code word is ghost. Thank you.
Thank you. Dr. Byer, do you have further questions, comments? Any other committee members? Dr. Davey.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, reflecting upon the conversation from a month ago and then just the realities of our practice continuing to evolve and, you know, being involved in now Medicaid billing and commercial billing and, you know, seeing, you know, the growth in terms of individuals that are coming out with their BA, you know, their national certification over the past decade. You know, I think a lot of this is, you know, some growing pains. And I do believe that the state association has a role to play in this that is parallel to our role, right? Our role is to protect the public. Our role is to enforce both the title and the practice portions of our Arizona our regulations and statutes. And I think from my standpoint, the places where we can clarify you know, what an LBA does and who an LBA supervises and what does supervision look like outside of supervising for your hours as a BCBA and getting some of that information clarified and moving towards an addition to our rules and statutes would be something that I would help rectify this on our side. I don't think this still, and I want to be very clear here, there's a bunch of that presentation from a month ago that is clearly not the purview of this board. Now, do we deal with the fallout of the things that were presented around inappropriate billing, agencies perhaps billing under someone they shouldn't be billing under, LBAs allowing people to use their MPI? Yes, we deal with the fallout of that, but I believe that that's not necessarily our charge. But I do think we can do some things to help clarify that. And if I look at like the Board of Health Examiners or other boards' rules and statutes, they do define kind of what ongoing supervision looks like. And I think that there may be a path for us to visit that going forward, which would then allow us to point to something very clear and say, hey, you know, if you were an LBA and you were supervising someone who's a BCBA while they're waiting for their licensure, here are the things you should be doing. And here are the things the board believes equal supervision. We don't have that right now. And so I do think there'd be some benefit, given that we know that this is we're never going to be a direct license state. We're always going to have these people that are in the queue with this board. And so I do believe that that is something we should you know, look at as a recommendation to the full board.
Dr. Stenhoff and Dr. Davey, if I may, I know that wasn't really a question, but I one of the things, and I agree with you, and I do agree, like even in just the definitions part of the statute, being able to expand upon even some population type conversations, because part of the issue that we run into, and we've heard this out in the community, is so many people link practice to billing. And so if they're not billing an entity, they don't see themselves practicing. So if I didn't bill for this service, then I'm actually not being a BCBA. And, you know, that's where it starts to become a problem, because then as you get those tiers and you guys have seen it on applications too, of like, you've got an application and this applicant for, you know, 7 months has been serving in a role that even if they're not directly seeing a patient, their role itself is still by definition the practice of behavior analysis. And as it stands, we don't have any exemptions around OBM type things. So any capacity of supervision, oversight, systems analyses in the realm of presenting ourselves as a BCBA. So if I'm not a BCBA, if I'm not holding myself out to be a BCBA and I'm doing performance plans in my company, or I'm doing, system, like behavioral system analyses within my company from the context of my training and education in business, then that's vastly different than I am a BCBA now doing these things, because we don't have exemptions to OBM in our statute. And so I completely agree that some of that language is going to be so important in the definitions. The one thing that I would encourage you guys to think about and discuss amongst yourselves is I do think there's enough language for a substantive policy statement that would serve as a better, not a better necessarily, but to serve as a placeholder for you in this time, because I do think that the exemption statutes are very clear that you must be enrolled in a training program that meets the national standards, which would mean that you must have a contract for supervision. It would mean you must be getting supervised 5% with your 4 contacts per month. So I do think that there's at least a kind of interim solution that could be considered that would not that I think that would serve as a tremendous public protection measure, but also the clarity that you're kind of speaking to in that holding pattern, because I agree with you, the statute would be the perfect place to make the changes. But what do we do in the interim? and it, to address that. And I would argue that as it stands right now, you probably do have the current language to be able to craft something that would lead to public protection.
Just so I'm clear, Dr. Davis-Wilson, you're speaking of exemption number 3 around the matriculated graduate students or the trainee, including
correct.
And with that language.
So with that language, there's the or there. So it's the matriculated graduate student or someone enrolled in a training program. And what I have in my presentation, and I can share with you, if you haven't seen the scope of competence article from Broadhead, Wilzinski, and colleagues, where they talk about, you know, we're in a profession where we should normalize post-certification supervision programs. And so what I would present is that or gives that little bit of that language ability to say, okay, maybe you're not a matriculated grad student, but we do have a defined supervision program and it's post-supervision. That language also says that you must identify that you're a supervisee level. And then from there, we also have the language that in the prohibitions that says you cannot hold yourself out as a BCBA. So essentially, when I pass my exam as a BCBA, I would be able to stay in that trainee role, provided I'm still enrolled in a contract and being supervised to meet the standards of the national board. And I'm not holding myself out to being a BCBA, which I think is twofold. One is I'm not using the credential. The credential is not changed on my LinkedIn and all of the places that the public may get confused. I'm clearly identifying that I am still a trainee, but then also that in informed consent and all the things that go out to the families, that the families as part of the informed consent understand that I am in a trainee status and have the contact information and ability to interact with my supervisor. And so I think those are all things that are already well defined already. And that or gives that little bit of the language for, I think, you guys to kind of be able to piggyback a little bit of a substantive policy statement.
Yeah, I mean, I see that. I also think that with all the commas and the ors, particularly number 3, that when you get to that discussion of the or supervised independent field work, I think that opens the door for that continued supervision post-graduation, right? Because the matriculated grad student is the beginning of that sentence, but then it essentially gives the comma or the trainee piece, right? Who's in a program of study or comma practicum or this or that, or, you know, all these ors up until the supervised field work. And then I think the second part of that piece is like where it says then that supervision, direct supervision, is consistent with the standards of the, essentially the BACB, which their supervision standards are about becoming a BCBA. Which again, we're past becoming a BCBA. They're already a BCBA. So I think our just adoption of that is somewhat problematic. And, you know, not that it doesn't work, but it's essentially trying to, you know, make something that it was not originally set forward to. And I agree with your statement that we're to the point of like post-graduation supervision is coming, right? The BACB is kind of nodded to that. We've seen, you know, we're seeing articles about that. So it would behoove us to get in front of that of, you know, as those standards start to grab hold, that we were using something similar to that. Or by this paragraph, like if we have access to the discussion with the BACB, like let's talk about what those are going to look like. Because if I read this now and the BAC publicizes what postgraduate supervision looks like, we're essentially saying in this exemption that if you are getting independent field work, supervised independent field work while you're waiting for your license to be adjudicated, that as long as you're following supervision standards that are outlined by the BACB for kind of post-graduation or post-certification, that you would be exempt there in terms of a practice. And I think that we could use some of that language. We could use some of our knowledge of what's coming down the pike to perhaps craft the policy, the substantive policy statement, and let then, work maybe perhaps as we look to clean up some of that language, issuing it obviously through the rules writer and GIRC and so on and so forth. And so I think that could be part of the recommendation to the full board as well, as to kind of get that number three caught up with the realities of 2024.
Mr. Chair, Dr. Davey, if I may, I agree with you. I don't think that it is the long-term solution. I think the concern, though, is to get to that long-term solution, there's nothing in between, and that's scary. There continues to be themes arise around this kind of vagueness of whether or not people are allowed to practice in this state or not. And again, the most vulnerable people are those technicians who have no idea. They're just taking a job. And oftentimes when they take it, they're not an RBT. They have not, like, this is news to them, and it's complex. And so I do agree with you there. One thing that I would just like to say on the record, and again, something that you guys can utilize to craft part of that substantive policy statement, and I do believe it's on my slides. If you look at 32-2091, section 12, I think the definition might be, it's in there. It might be G. So you also have then this other statute that says the supervisor is accountable for all services of the person they are supervising. So I think even if tomorrow the BACB were to say, hey, we're going to define post-certification supervision as, you know, well, they are right now, right? You have the 1 hour of consult training. I think you could clarify in there two pieces, is that one, the post supervision would need to meet the rigor of the supervised independent fieldwork standards, because you don't want it to meet the consultant standards, the consultant supervisor standards that they currently have. But I think, again, that the language would allow for you to do that, because it says, or a supervised experience. And so you could say, you know, currently this is the BACB's standards for a supervised experience. But then if they were to change that, I think you would still be able to say at the end of the day, the BACB very clearly uses the word minimum. And so even if their minimum is 1 hour a month of whatever, your statute says you will supervise to the degree that's safe for the public. And so while that's not defined, it still, I think, would give you that like ability. And I mean, this is probably a question, legal question for you guys to just ponder and talk with Ms. Galvin about. But, you know, I would also, I've never seen a circumstance where a substantive policy issue has been issued in my time, has been issued, but then removed. But because it's just a policy statement, I would imagine that there would be some flexibility that if tomorrow the BACB came out with something that was like, whoa, no, this isn't, there might be, because it's not like a statute change. It's based on the information we have today, we issued this policy clarification. If that information changes, I don't know what the process would be to change the substantive policy statement. That would be something for you guys to sort out. But again, if I look at everything going on and I look at that with the access to care, but then that public protection piece, I think some sort of clarity is needed sooner than later.
Any further questions or comments for Dr. Davis Wilson? And also the committee, is there any action that any of you would like to propose this time or moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the recommendation would be that we go to the full board and ask, we essentially need their blessing and permission. And I don't know and I'll defer to board staff on how they want to do this, that we that we craft some clarifications around this for potential for a policy statement. Do we need their permission first, Heidi, or do we craft first and then bring it to them just as a point of order?
Dr. Davey, that's exactly the question that was formulating in my mind. I mean, I think where we're arriving at is a consensus, you know, to at least make an attempt to draft a substantive policy statement. So my question to Jean is the same as yours. You know, do we need board permission, or can the committee, you know, invest some time and effort in preparing a draft and then bring that draft to the board, you know, once the committee is satisfied with it?
Yeah, it would be appropriate for the committee to initiate a draft and then submit it to the board for discussion and approval.
Thank you. That was what I was hoping you would say. It just sort of streamlines the process. And then I also wondered if the committee sort of wants, you know, me to weigh in relative to, you know, kind of the implementation piece of what I think you're discussing and the practicalities and those kinds of things.
Thank you, Ms. Pakanan. I would appreciate that.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. So, yes, I'm fully prepared and committed to, you know, working on, with a group, a small drafting group, I think would be ideal to prepare the substantive policy statement draft, bring it back to the committee. It seems it's too daunting of a task for, you know, the committee to do in an ensemble kind of fashion. So if that's what you direct me to do, I'm happy and fully prepared to do that. I did want to touch on, you know, a little bit too from the, other pieces of the discussion. So, you know, promulgating rules relative to supervision standards, you know, because you have, as I see it, broad statutory authority, the language and statute to establish, you know, the supervision responsibilities, if you will, drafting a rule is very plausible. And so that's something that we can sort of think about and consider, you know, again, that would require board approval. But to me, that's, you know, something that should be, you know, contemplated and, But I don't see any statutory barriers. So I just wanted to register my thoughts, my observations on that piece. Of course, you know, we all need to acknowledge, we always do, that statutory change is, you know, much more daunting and unpredictable. You know, there are potential risks that come with, you know, the rewards, if you will, that, you know, you might be seeking in the process. And I think that what I'm going to recommend to the committee is that those kinds of discussions around statute change should probably be, you know, very closely coordinated with AZ-ABA. We all know that AZ-ABA has, you know, a goal relative to proposing legislation, re-proposing legislation that would establish a separate behavior analyst regulatory board. And so one of the considerations that would need to be made is, would another bill that, you know, sort of well-intentioned, but doesn't necessarily, isn't intended to interfere with this other goal and objective, might that be one of the unintended consequences? So we really need to be, you know, thoughtful, strategic, you know, and make sure that, that we closely coordinate any of those kinds of considerations, you know, with AZ-ABA, because I think no one wants to see, you know, one objective sabotage another, or, you know, for both of them to fail because of the lack of coordination. And hopefully that makes sense.
Yes. So do we need to make a motion on this or just agreeing?
I think if you want to just give staff authority, or if you want to establish a committee of maybe just two members. of this committee to work on that substantive policy statement?
Yeah, I'll volunteer to help on that.
Dr. Davis Wilson, you have your hand up.
Hey, Mr. Chair, I appreciate it. I just wanted to ask Ms. Pagnon, as far as rules, just as something to think about, because there aren't any rules around kind of that because the rule would be coming from that kind of exemption statute. Is the rule writing even a direction that can go, or because I guess for in my mind, because there aren't any other rules associated with that, I just want to make sure that the committee is able to decipher which of the two options are better between a substantive policy statement or rule. I wasn't thinking that direction, which is obviously not my role anymore, but I just wanted to just seek clarification on what kind of you were suggesting as a potential.
Mr. Chair, may I? Okay.
Yeah, please.
I see the substantive policy statement as the first most essential step. And then meanwhile, there can be some consideration around is there an opportunity, is there value to proposing some standards for supervision that are, you know, very clear and very, you know, measurable, if you will, as a separate rulemaking effort. If that's where, if I understood correctly, that's maybe a tangent of this greater conversation, but it also may be, you know, helpful too. So in my observation, it's very common to see, you know, again, the broad responsibilities and restrictions to supervision are articulated in the statutes, but then the specificity, of course, could be articulated in a rule. So if that also has, you know, some value and it's somewhat related to this bigger issue, then let's make sure we don't lose sight of that potential project. I need to look carefully. I think we might have enough funding budgeted for that would be a fairly comprehensive or not comprehensive, somewhat of an ambitious rulemaking. So I just want to make sure that we might have the budget for it in this fiscal year. So I think we want to pick up this conversation maybe in a month or two.
So Ms. Pagnon, if I may too, so under the current rulemaking processes, are there still restrictions to adding without removing? I know it's a different governor and different circumstances, but for a while we couldn't add rules without documenting what rules could be removed. Is that still going to be, because like I said, that would be my only thing here to is that rule writing would in this realm would be an addition and not like just a revision or a reduction. And so I would have kind of that question. And then there is the statute that requires the committee to work with AZIABA, you know, in to make attempts to work with AZIABA in this realm. And so obviously the timing of some of their legislation stuff would probably be, you know, important there too. But I just, as far as, is it even a possibility? I think at least under the prior governor, it was not, it like adding rules would not have really been an easy possibility.
Mr. Chair, thank you, Dr. Davis Wilson, articulating that question, because I don't know that the public would necessarily know that to be the case. So yes, what was previously an executive order issued really on an annual basis to Arizona state agencies, that if the agency wanted to propose a new rule, recommend. It may have been at least one, or maybe it was even three. I can't remember the executive order language, but yes, it was at least to identify, recommend rules that could be eliminated because we were proposing a new one. So that did get memorialized actually in a statute within the last, I think the last 2 years. And but the language still states it's a recommendation. So we take our request to initiate a rulemaking first to the governor's office, and we can recommend elimination of rules, but it's the governor's office discretion whether or not that's even truly necessary. If we are able to, you know, make the justification that, you know, hey, we don't have articulated supervision standards in our rules. This is a departure from other professions. You know, this is inconsistent with best practices. Whatever justification we supply, even if, you know, we're unable to identify other rules that can be eliminated, we can still, you know, make the case to the governor's office. This rule is still needed. That being said, I am still finding rules that I don't understand why we adopted in the first place, because I find them to be quite duplicative of statute language. And just between you and me and anybody who's listening, there's a whole lot of rules in Article 3 of the board's chapter that they actually concern me, because I am not sure those rules, I think what they do is they cite to or re-articulate statute language in Title 41. I am not sure, always sure, that language is still current and contemporary and correct. So I don't mind going through that particular article and finding rules that can be sacrificed, because really the statutory authority exists in Title 41. So why are we wasting paper by, you know, restating the same, you know, requirements or a lot of its due process language for licensees? Why is it in our rules in the first place? So long answer, but I can find rules to, you know, throw into the sacrificial fire if we need to.
So, Mr. Chair, if I may, Ms. Pagnon, thank you for that. I just wanted to again, just throw that out there from just some historical context. And I guess to your point, that's exactly why kind of that statute exists, right? Is that we're not just adding all these things without reviewing and doing some of that. The only other question that I have with that, and this will be my last question, and so I will mute myself after this, but thank you guys very much for your time. I know that I was here to answer questions. I feel like I'm asking more than answering, but I appreciate your guys' time. And if there's anything that I can do to help in kind of the crafting or answer questions or anything, I will ensure that I can be available to you guys at your guys' discretion. For my last question, if ASIABA pursues the legislation again this next year, and obviously this would be part of the coordination, wouldn't rule writing, if passed, rule writing would have to happen anyway. And so is that correct?
Mr. Chair, yes, Dr. Davis-Wilson. And my intention has been all along that because there will be, assumedly, at least that's how last year's bill was proposed, a delayed effective date for that change. So I will be asking for somewhere in the neighborhood of $1 million, I'm exaggerating slightly, to do rulemaking. There will be, you know, a need for a very comprehensive rulemaking associated with, you know, a very comprehensive and substantial change to the statute. So I would anticipate that could be, that could be folded in, or this other piece could be folded into that greater effort.
Fantastic. I know I said that was my last question, and it was, I promise, but I am just, I don't know. I'm on my phone, so I can't see if Aziaba is on here. But I definitely would piggyback on what you said, Ms. Pakanon, about, you know, kind of coordinating with Aziaba, because depending on what the lobbyists and all of the recommendations may be, there might be some wiggle room for some statute changes. I know they were not doing large language changes in the last rendition because of the state of legislation. But I think if that is something the lobbyists think is a different part of the strategy, I think that that would behoove you guys to explore with the association. And again, thank you guys so much for inviting me here and trusting my insight. I appreciate the questions and the opportunity to answer. And I'm available if you need anything.
Mr. Chair, may I make one more comment on the point of Aziaba?
Yeah.
So I'm sorry, I'm floundering at the moment. I am trying to figure out when our CBA meetings, our future CBA meetings are falling on the calendar. At any rate, that's not terribly important, but I think that post-election, it would be really beneficial for Aziaba and the committee to schedule a meeting. And it may be that our meeting agenda, our regular meeting agenda, would accommodate, you know, some time for Aziaba to join us so we can have this conversation about, so, you know, now that we understand, you know, what the legislative composition, you know, consists of, and their lobbyist has formulated, hopefully, or is formulating, you know, a plan for the 2025 session. I think that's the perfect time, you know, to have that conversation. So, you know, all of this can be, you know, coordinated and clear. So I'll figure out the timing, even if I can't figure out when the rest of the meetings are for this year. But obviously, at some point post November 5, I think we should, you know, make sure that we can get together with Aziaba.
Thank you, Ms. Pakanon. And just, it looks like the next CBA meeting after the election would be December 6th.
Thank you.
Looks like, yeah.
Perfect.
Looks like, okay. All right, so do we have a plan in place moving forward with this agenda item?
Mr. Chair, what I heard was that Dr. Davey will work with me, and Dr. Davis-Wilson offered, you know, her support and involvement. So I think what we do is the three of us sit down together and start working on a draft to bring to the committee.
All right.
And by a draft, I mean a substantive policy statement.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Pakanon, and thank you, Dr. Davis-Wilson, for being here. All right, agenda item number 8, discussion, consideration, action regarding updates from the BACB. Ms. Pakanon?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. So we, after I don't know, 3-4 months of really inactivity, you know, very scant, if any, communications of a regulatory nature coming from the BACB. We do now have some material, some information and updates. So the BACB, they are very... They dutifully attend the large national and international, you know, regulatory conferences and conventions, and they remind regulatory stakeholders, I should say, about those opportunities. Of course, we rarely, if ever, avail ourselves of them because we don't have the budget for those kinds of activities, which is regrettable because, you know, I think that would be something that we would take, you know, that would be a valuable experience just to network with other behavior analytic regulatory boards. At any rate, there was also an announcement that January 1, Minnesota will require licensure for behavior analysts. So we will need to update our resources, our reference resources that everyone I know on this committee relies upon when you're reviewing applications. So staff will commit to doing that. My conversations with that board's executive director, so behavior analysts like in Arizona, they will be licensed by the Board of Psychology in Minnesota, and their executive director and I met recently. He had a series of questions for me as their first, you know, foray into really this world and this set of responsibilities. He anticipated that they would be licensing about 400 individuals, BCBAs in the state of Minnesota, and they really only had maybe 100 days time to do it. So definitely a very daunting proposition that they were facing, that they are facing. What I did also learn in the process is that their application requirements will closely emulate, will be modeled after those for Texas. So that, of course, is a departure for how Arizona's statutory construct is for application, you know, requirements, substantive review, and so forth. So I just share that with you for as an FYI. Any questions on those topics before I move forward to the other two conversations?
I don't have any.
So two conversations have emerged recently on the regulators listserv, and we can thank, I believe it was the Kentucky board chair for initiating them. So one really had to do with an issue that, you know, this committee and this board has discussed for just in recent months, and that is the challenge associated with ensuring that regulatory language in the jurisdictions are able to keep pace with the BACB as the ethics code sort of as new iterations of the code are adopted and published and so forth. And what I took away from the conversation is there are other boards like Arizona where, you know, we have to be so precise in our rule language or our regulation language in terms of, you know, what version of the code that we incorporate by reference or that we enforce or you know, whatever the states, you know, however they must, you know, their formal process. What I also saw, of course, were states chiming in where they have a whole lot more latitude. So, you know, they can, as the goalpost moves, they can move to the goalpost. So I found that kind of, you know, an interesting dynamic that, you know, there were sort of different levels of accommodation, if you will, when that publication, when new iterations of that publication are created. I asked or suggested that, you know, maybe there be more conversation around that. I don't know if that will happen or, you know, what if any venue that might occur. But at any rate, it was interesting for me to see. Maybe just raising awareness to the BACB that, you know, we, at least a few boards, you know, it really is, we're going to be behind, we're going to be, you know, chasing different versions of the code. And maybe the BACB, you know, wasn't aware of that until sort of this issue bubbled up. So I'll stop there because I think that there may be comments about that issue. I saw Dr. Davey did not have his mute button on, so I was assuming he had comments. Okay.
No, I've had my mute button. I've been just interrupting people left and right, so I just left myself unmuted, but I was not planning on interrupting you there.
Okay, very good. I will, you know, keep, of course, the committee informed if this conversation escalates or continues in any fashion. And then the other conversation was around temporary licenses. So several jurisdictions chimed in. Yes, we do, or no, we don't. You may have noticed I didn't chime in, and I could have, but I think I would have, in doing so, I would have had to preface it by saying it's complicated here in Arizona. So we do have statutory authority. The regulatory boards, there is a statute, it's a broad statute. There is some regulatory authority in statute to establish a temporary license. But what we have observed about it is that it really isn't the solution that many people might be looking for. It's such a short-term solution. It's a 30-day limit, and it's limited to anyone who holds a license in another jurisdiction. So it's one that this board has never seen the value in promulgating rules for, because it really doesn't achieve much of an objective, and certainly not the kinds of objectives that this committee has struggled with, you know, new BCBAs, you know, the delays in application processing, you know, giving them 30 days and yanking it back doesn't do them, you know, any favors and so forth. So that's why I really didn't chime in to say, well, here's what we have, because I would have had to explain to, you know, here's what we don't have. And let me explain, you know, one more wrinkle to this issue that I don't know the answer to. It's something that just occurred to me very, very recently, and I haven't really researched it effectively. But so if this board were to try to promulgate a rule for to establish temporary licensure for behavior analysts and craft it in a way that, you know, would be closer to a solution of the kind that we've been long talking about, I am not sure that we could actually move forward with that, because House Bill 2910, which is the bill that modified the funding allocation for formerly 9010 board, sorry, we're at 8515 now, as of a couple of weeks ago, that bill that forced us from, you know, the 90-10 allocation of funds to, of income received to our fund, 10% to the general fund. So now it's been redistributed to 85-15. There's also a provision in that bill that there's a three-year, a limit until 2026, I believe, to through fiscal year 2026. So we cannot implement or pursue any fee increases through fiscal year 2026. So what I'm unclear about is, would this be a prohibition because it would be proposing a new fee, or does the bill just really curtail fee increases on existing fees? I don't know the answer to that, but there would also need to be a process to navigate with the Governor's Regulatory Review Council to establish on an emergency basis that we need to raise a fee. So we may be thwarted through the passage of this legislation anyway. This is all sort of, you know, brand new, and I almost didn't raise it because, you know, this is only, you know, recently bubbled up to my attention, and I have more questions than I have answers at this point. Ms. Galvin, any insights that I don't have?
Not at this time. If you do go through the emergency rulemaking process, that'll come through the AG's office and not GIRC. But it's something that I will help you explore.
Yes, thank you. I'll ambush you at some point in time for us to look at this, you know, unless the committee indicates, you know, that maybe this isn't worth sort of exploring at this time. I'll just take whatever direction you have for me.
I would also say, Ms. Packett, it's kind of like a moving target, right? With some of the bills that are working through, I think that there's some bills that may be coming even through this year that may change the outlook on this, considering like that we're running bills. Like we're going to get, what's going to be interesting is we're going to get, you know, I think this has happened to us, like, or you've warned this would happen to us in the past. Like we get all organized around something that's currently in process, and then all of a sudden, guess what? A new bill has been, you know, signed by the governor, and now the process is different again. So I think it's, you know, probably from my standpoint, just making as being as prepared as we possibly can be, right? Like there's no way we can anticipate everything that's going on. So maybe just some basic understanding of where we stand today, you know, coming back from Ms. Galvin of like, here's what we believe the path is given the current environment. And then, you know, we can maybe update that maybe as a standing agenda item, you know, as we kind of go into January and the committee start to form and the leadership is picked at the Senate and the House. Maybe then we just have maybe a standing update, like almost like we do on the full board, like, you know, and what you've done for us in the past, like that legislative update that could kind of help us understand if the environment's shifting underneath our feet.
Certainly, yes.
Any further comments for Ms. Packer? Okay. All right. So next agenda, agenda items for future meetings. Any suggestions on those for the?
Oh, I did have one. Reviewing applications this last time, like I was noticing the dates on some of the things submitted. And one of the questions I had was looking at the feasibility of a poor Z, she's probably going to think I'm nuts, but a all hands on deck workday. Like, could we as a committee hold a meeting to help do some of the work? Like those of us that could volunteer to come in and spend a Friday with Z and perhaps have a meeting schedule, like notice a meeting for that as a working meeting or whatever, and then notice a meeting for us to adjudicate any licenses that we could move forward, you know, at 5 p.m. on a Wednesday or whenever our work day would end. Is there any mechanism that allows us to, I guess I'm asking, is there any mechanism that this board, which has the power to move licenses, is there any mechanism where we could have a work day to help you guys? And to help our applicants, I guess is what I'm asking. Not very articulately. Heidi's like, oh my God, Brian, what are you doing? And by the way, I'm not volunteering anybody else, but I would volunteer myself if that was helpful to your team.
So Ms. Galvin, unmute. I think I'll defer to her first and then I'll respond with my thoughts.
Wow, I really I'm going to get it if I've got both of you thinking and Ms. Galvin ready to chime in.
Because the committee reviews all applications, it would not be a problem with someone coming into the office to assist staff in processing those applications. I would not recommend that it be posted, that it be a meeting, but just, you know, one or two of you at a time. Whether that's helpful to staff is another question. Not that you aren't all immensely qualified, but when it gets down to the nitty-gritty of processing applications, you know, we don't want to see Ms. Mellis, you know, running away in the middle of the night.
No, we do not. And so if she's like, stay away, Brian, like, I get it. It's only if this is like, only if it's helpful. Like, again, like in Heidi, you don't have to respond now, but if that was something that your team was like, wow, if we could get 8 hours of somebody that's empowered and has the authority to help, like I would figure out a way to give those hours and volunteer those hours over to your office.
I'm going to jump in really quick. Ms. Mellis, would you give us the code word really quick while we're in the middle of talking about your job, people helping out?
Yes, yes, Mr. Chair. The next code word is Donkey Kong. Donkey Kong. Thanks.
And really, this isn't on the agenda today. So, you know, we would have to discuss it further, you know, or Heidi and Dr. Davey could have a discussion.
Yes, I am not sure this will be on the next agenda. I know there's one coming up. I'm almost certain, Ms. Michelson, help me. I think the next agenda, because I'm at the ASPPB meeting, I think the next one is applications only. So it would be, you know, potentially the one that follows. So that December meeting that Dr. Stenhoff mentioned earlier, that gives me some time to contemplate what this could look like potentially. So I think putting it on an agenda in December makes the most sense.
Ms. Pakenham, just to clarify your question, the CBA meeting October is on the 25th, which is actually the week before the ASPPB meeting. There's complaints on both the October and December agenda, so we can determine when is the best timing.
Okay, thank you. See, I have no clarity about upcoming meetings whatsoever, so I should just stop talking about them.
Any other future agenda item? Okay, in that case, it is now 12:39. This meeting of the CBA is adjourned. Thank you, everybody.